Podsednik hits one to deep right center field. Back at the wall. This ball is gone. Podsednik goes deep. His second home run of the postseason. And the White Sox win it 7-6.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
Welcome back on a beautiful Saturday morning in the city of Chicago. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. David Haw, Bruce Levine for another hour. And yes, nobody will ever forget that highlight if you're a Sox fan or a Chicago sports fan. Brings us to our next guest who joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Scott Podsednik. How are you?
I'm doing good, David. Good morning. Clip from 19 years ago woke me up a little more than that shot of coffee I had this morning, so thank you for that.
Never gets old, Scotty Pods, never gets old, and you do a great job. Yeah, this isn't the season for many highlights on the South Side.
No. I don't think we were expecting things to be this bad at the start of this season, but it's been a pretty rough go. It just boils down to Sox not playing enough fundamentally sound baseball. I mean, we could sit here and go on for days about mistakes and miscues, but it's tough times right now for those loyal White Sox fans.
Scotty, thanks for taking some time out today, and I would just start with Pedro Grifol and the manager's job. You played baseball for a million years, 11 in the big leagues, another 10 in the minor leagues. You had countless different managers, including the incredibly unique Ozzie Guillen. What is it that you need from a manager, from your perspective, on a team that's rebuilding, trying to develop young players, keep veterans interested and ready to help out on a daily basis? What is the main charge for a manager in this position? What's the charge for Pedro Grifol?
You know, Bruce, that's such a great question because, you know, the personality you have leading, the guy that's in charge, the way he interacts with all of the personalities you have on that club, there's so many different variables to that. But this, you know, Pedro's job is to show up to the park and do what he can to get the most out of his players, plugging guys into certain situations, handling the media, taking the heat off the guys when things aren't going bad. Look, he's in a tough spot right now. It would be disingenuous for me to sit here and pick apart the job he's done this season. I've never been in that position before. I've never been in that type of seat with what he has to deal with. It's been hard, but the bottom line is we look out and see, is this club performing up to expectations? And I think we could all agree that they're not. I mean, is this a championship caliber ball club? No, we knew that coming out of spring training, but are they reaching their potential as a team? No, they're not. There's a lot of room for improvement. There's just too many things they do on the baseball field that work against them. They don't play winning baseball. They make too many mistakes. So then you have to start looking at why. Is it the leadership? Is it the plan? Is it the approach? Is it just the execution? There's so many moving parts, but there's from where they are right now, Bruce, there's only one way to go, and that's up. Chris Getz has a job to do. Let's hope that he can start making some moves and plugging in guys that can come together and start turning this thing around here on the south side of Chicago.
Scott, obviously you were on a World Series champion, but I'm sure you were also on teams that struggled, and you knew that was going to be the reality as early as June, like we are here and now. So if you had to give any advice to a White Sox young player or veteran facing the rest of the season, going to the park every day, what would it be? And how challenging is that to show up for work every day knowing the outcome might not be what you want?
It is incredibly challenging. It boils down to self-discipline. I've been on teams to where you get sixth, seventh inning, the other team pulls ahead, and you can almost just feel, oh gosh, here we go again. Thursday's game, the Sox ended up winning, but the way that game was going towards the end, there in the later innings, I could feel a negative attitude overtaking me. It's kind of like, oh gosh, here we go again. They're going to blow this thing late. And if I'm thinking that, I know some of the players are thinking that. Some of the coaching staff is thinking that. That's just part of it. We're all human. But as a player, you've got to have the discipline to kind of switch that attitude. I think you've got to kind of create little games within the game. You know, you can look at the big picture and see where you are in the standings, see how that you only have 18 wins, or you can come to the park and say, hey, I'm gonna focus on this. I'm gonna play my game. I'm gonna do my best to help increase the chances of my club winning a game today. It's tough to do. And, there are some guys that are better at it than others, but the more guys you have with that kind of discipline, with that kind of attitude, the better club you're going to have.
Scott, you are the prime example, in my opinion, of where baseball's at and where it needs to go as far as offense and players' offensive techniques. You totally renovated your approach at the plate from coming from Milwaukee to the White Sox in 2005 in the Carlos Lee trade, and you helped transform the White Sox offense from a slug first to an on-base percentage steal team, creating pressure on the defense team. You also resuscitated your own career by going from 12 home runs and a low 300 on base percentage to a 351 on base percentage. How can baseball players do what Scott Podsednik did now, being caught in between the launch angle era and the line drive era of trying to become just baseball players again?
Yeah, as a player, you have to self-evaluate. You have to understand who you are. You have to know your strengths and weaknesses, have an identity, so to speak. You know, at that time, I was new to the big leagues. I was still figuring things out, still growing, still learning, still maturing as a player. But fortunately, you know, I had the ability to look in the mirror and say, okay, well, what do I have to do to be the best Scott Podsednik or be the best version of myself? Going up to the plate, trying to drive in runs was going to do nothing for me. So I had to kind of create a game and look at my skills and say, hey, what am I good at? How am I going to maximize? So I think, you know, just the self-awareness of looking at who you are and knowing what you're good at. And these players are in a tough spot right now, Bruce, with all of the information and with all the numbers and data that is in front of them and out there. You can get lost in it. You really can. I'm not going to say we shouldn't pay attention to the information. You know, there's some valuable stuff out there. But at the end of the day, it's still a game. It's a reaction game. It's an athletic game. Fans want to see guys go out playing hard, giving themselves up, sacrificing themselves on behalf of the team. The game has changed. It's a different game today than it was 10, 15 years ago. Ozzy and I, kind of agree. We'd like to see the White Sox be a little better hitting in certain situations. I mean, when there's a guy on second base, nobody out early in the game and in a tied ball game, when Ozzy and I don't see a guy trying to get someone over from second base, we get fired up. But that looks to be something the Sox just don't put a lot of stock in. We repeatedly see guys just still trying to pull the ball, still trying to drive that guy in. And maybe that's what the White Sox, that's what they feel they're going to score more runs doing it that way. Ozzy and I played in a different time. And Ozzy always talks about how Canerico, guy on second base in the fifth inning, he is trying to drive that ball the other way. And that's our RBI guy. That's our main horse. That's just the way we played the game. It worked for us. We had a good pitching staff that kept us in ball games, so we figure if we can manufacture some runs here or there, we could win some games. So the game's definitely changed. You see guys going looking for home run or bust, and it's just it doesn't seem to be as an exciting brand of baseball as it was 10, 15 years ago.
We're talking with Scott Podsednik, who does a terrific job analyzing the White Sox on NBC Sports Chicago, along with Ozzie Guillen on the pre- and post-game show. And Scott, you also are pretty good friends with Chris Getz, have a good relationship there. So maybe you can help us, you know, lend some insight into what he will be thinking moving forward as we get near the trade deadline, how aggressive he might be, because this is a team in the White Sox has been described as one of the teams that will be the most active, and they have obviously the most reason to sell. But what do you think Chris Getz is thinking as the trade deadline arrives or gets closer?
Well, Chris and I played together for a couple of years. I have not talked a lot with him over the last couple of years. He's a bright guy. He understands the challenge that's in front of him. You know, I know that he's going to exhaust every resource, every thought, anything he can do to try to turn this thing around here in Chicago. It's a tough job. There's so many moving parts to fielding a team. Not only the talents, you know, the personalities, the minor leagues, what kind of team are you wanting to feel? What kind of approach are you going to take? Are you going to get lost in the numbers? Are you going to try to field a home run hitting club, a slugging club? Are you going to try to field a team who steals bases, a more athletic team? There's so many moving parts. Obviously depends on what's out there and the kind of returns you're going to get with some of these trades. But I'm just like you. I'm excited to see the moves he's going to make and what kind of job he's going to do over the next year or two to try to field a better product down there at Guaranteed Rate.
Scott, you and Ozzie and Chuck do such a great job on NBC Sports Chicago postgame show on the White Sox, and so much fun to watch you guys, you know, kind of kid around yesterday and do that, you know, take off of late night. It's a good time. You do have a career as a comedian if you want to go into that as well.
I mean, Scotty Fallon.
Yes, it was funny. But my question to you is about Ozzie. And I wonder what, from your perspective, having played for him, knowing him as well as you have, having won a World Series with him, forget about the White Sox job. That's Pedro Grifols. Why is Ozzie Guillen not a manager? He goes to Venezuela last year. They win the Winter League Championship. Everywhere he's gone, he's been a good manager. Certainly, you know, there's a bump in the road in Miami. But can you tell me a good reason why Ozzie Guillen, in your mind, is not a major league manager somewhere right now?
Well, I'm going to leave that question up to Ozzie and his wife and his family to answer. But I will say this. Baseball would be much better, and there's some team out there that would be faring much better with Ozzie at the helm. I've got a chance to spend a lot of time around Ozzie these last 3 years, and I've gotten to know him much better, and I've done nothing but gained more of a respect for Ozzie Guillen. He has this crazy ability to be telling some wild, crazy story, hollering and yelling, yet see every detail that happens in a baseball game. And not only see the detail, but to understand the results of what could have happened or what will happen. His baseball intelligence and baseball acumen is just off the charts. He sees the game in such a different dynamic than I do, and just has this awareness and this acute sense to see and predict what's going to happen on the baseball field. There's no question he'd be helping some other club manage. Why isn't he? I don't know. I'm going to leave that up to him to answer, and Ebus. I know he has grandchildren who he loves being around. You know, it's a stressful job. It is traveling around the country. you know, it's much more stressful than the gig he has now, getting in there and mixing it up with Chuck and Frank and Gordon. He does a great job. It's so fun. I'm so fortunate and grateful to be able to join those guys with these shows. But, yeah, Ozzie is a character, and the way he sees baseball is just it's incredible and fun to be around and to be a part of.
Is he too honest for Major League Baseball executives to handle?
I don't think so. I think they need it. These are grown men playing the game. These are grown men who are in these executive positions, and I feel like you're going to benefit more from saying the truth and trying to candy around exactly what's going on. I love his honesty. I love where he stands. As a player, you can't help but respect that. You know, I have teammates in the game that I've played with for a long time, and all we wanted as players was to be shot straight. Tell me what you think of me. Tell me where I can improve. So, Bruce, I think the honesty and him calling it like it is a benefit to the game. If you don't like it, if your feelings are hurt, so be it. This is a big boy game.
Scott, you're doing a great job, and keep it up, and we really appreciate your time this morning.
David, you bet. Thanks for having me, guys. Bruce, good chatting.
Scott Pasednik, NBC Sports Chicago White Sox analyst. He tells the truth too, Bruce. I mean, he's not afraid to be honest about what he's watching, and I think that makes their analysis of the worst team in baseball worth watching, because that's the best part.
Ozzie convinced Kenny Williams to change the dynamic from the 2014 to 2005 by making those trades. He convinced Scott Pasednik to change his game. The year before, Pasednik hit .240 and hit 12 home runs with Milwaukee, had an on-base percentage of about .302. He totally changed his game. Ozzie had a lot to do with that. A big dynamic of change was the philosophy of the front office allowing Ozzie to say, we need slug, but we need guys that can get on base. We need guys that aren't just looking to hit home runs. We need ball players here. They did it, and they won a World Series. I think Ozzie could do it again.
I think that's a good point, Bruce. I also think when you talk about the Pasednik acquisition that year at that time and what they were looking for, they were looking for something that didn't really have to do with production as much as it had to do with chemistry. And I think to look at, obviously, it's maybe a bit of a reach, but you look at this Cub team that's underachieving. I think they need something that's different about the makeup. They need something that will allow them to maybe loosen up or maybe have some fun or maybe do something that's different from the way they're doing it now. When you make trades, it's not always about production. Sometimes it's about the mix in a clubhouse, in a lineup, and how things fit together. Not necessarily just all talent alone. It's got to be able to fit and meld it together.
Well, David, this is where Craig Council and I have disagreed up to this point, and I understand his disagreement. I think the top of the order is impacting the offensive flow of the game, okay? And even though Michael Tauchman's been the most consistent and best player on the Cubs all year long, Pete Crow Armstrong should be the leadoff man of this team, but it's probably a year early to expect him to be the player that he's going to be. He's going to be that player. He's going to lead off for a team. He's going to create runs. He's going to create havoc on the defense. You're going to have Horner bat second. That would be ideal 1-2. But, you know, right now, if you talk to Council, he'll push back and say, you know what, he's still learning how to play the game. We're helping him learn. He's doing well. But again, the Cubs have a lot of guys that are in player development, third base, first base, center field, catcher, okay? So these are not the players that they're going to be. They're going to be better players. Unfortunately, you can't just, you know, put your magic wand out there and say, boom, you're it. I don't think they're quite there yet. It might be a different dynamic, a different team next year.
Let's squeeze in a quick phone call, 312-644-6767. Mike is in Glencoe. Thank you for waiting, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning, fellas, and happy Father's Day. An observation on Scotty Pod's comment and Ozzie. The White Sox are, what, 35 games under .500. They're dead last place. They're the worst team in baseball. They can't draw fleas in the stands. They have a manager who is polarizing. Unfortunately, they have a broadcast team that's highly polarizing, and they have an ownership group of people in their 80s who make accept no public responsibility for the demise of the team. There is nothing positive about this team. There's no happiness. It's all doubt. You know, and other than the prospects that will come in a couple of years, Ozzy is the kind of personality that actually could maintain a positive, optimistic, interested front in the fans. Mr. Grifol has a personality style that does not engage with fans well. The broadcast booth is turning people off. But a guy like Ozzy, a guy like Joe Maddon, someone who can day in, day out, engage with people, be credible, and send a message in a positive way or an engaging way or a happy way, I think is exactly what the White Sox need. Because otherwise, it's just, you know, Bruce, look down in Charlotte today. What's Colson Montgomery batting? How many strikeouts?
I think we lost Mike, but he makes a good point, Bruce. There's a lot of frustration there, and I don't know if Ozzie Guillen would solve everything, but I don't think that's a realistic possibility as much as we all would like
this, I wouldn't wish it on Ozzie right now.
I know. Okay. He's very happy. He's content.
I mean, would he take it? Maybe. Maybe he would if he heard the right things and they showed him the love that made him feel like he fit for the next 5 years as the White Sox manager. But the reality is, and I didn't even get around to Scott as our guest to talk about it, the talent is not there right now, okay? So expectations should be about player development, about guys getting better, okay? About pitchers coming along, like you talked about, David, the beginning of our show. That's really where the concentration is right now. Try to project the future. Yeah, White Sox fans, go out to the ballpark, have fun with your family, but realize, look at the players, hopefully, that'll be there next year and the year after, and hopefully in the second half, David. Some of the guys, more of the guys from Birmingham, not Charlotte, but Birmingham, make their way up to the big leagues and start progressing, because I really like some of the pitching that the White Sox have, and I think they're going to continue to build that first, their pitching structure first, and then the rest later.
Bruce, we have a great audience, baseball fans on both sides of town, and next Friday everyone can enjoy June 21st, 6 p.m., the premiere of A Salute to Sandberg right here on The Score, one hour documentary honoring the legacy of Ryne Sandberg before his statue was unveiled at Wrigley. 2 days later, that's on June 23rd, they will do the unveiling. Mark Grody time. He'll host A Salute to Sandberg featuring interviews with Rhino himself, Andre Dawson, many more, including guys from Rhino's career and many memories. A Salute to Sandberg premieres next Friday from 6 to 7 right here on your home for the Cubs, 670 The Score. When we come back, time to play a little chin music. We like that game. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
High and inside.
For some chin music.
Hey, Yon, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the nature of... Look, I think we all love the Friday day games. But sometimes the schedule, loving the Friday day games and playing well, sometimes the schedule gets you a little bit.
Welcome back. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That was Craig Counsell playing a little chin music here, responding to a question Friday about why in the world the Cubs were playing a day game at Wrigley Field after a night game in Tampa. They got back between 2 and 3 in the morning, Bruce. Less than ideal circumstances. I'm not offering an excuse, but boy, they have yet to score a run since returning from the road trip. And you could say the bats were tired, and you'd be right, and everybody else swinging them was even more fatigued. I just think they had options. They have alternatives, or do they? What is the status of playing Friday night games at Wrigley Field?
No, Friday and Saturday night games are limited, and it's part of the schedule before. It's a a deal that still exists with the neighborhood among the 40 or so night games, and therefore traffic situations and people coming home from work has always been a consideration. So this has to be, you know, you have to petition the alderman, petition the neighborhood, and get that done. Now, that said, Major League Baseball has a responsibility here, David. That's where the real responsibility was at. They tell Tampa Bay, look, the Cubs are playing a day game in Chicago. They can't change it. You have to switch the time of that game. That's a noon start in Tampa. That's not a night game. They're still going to draw 16,000 per game, whether it's the day or the night in Tampa. They don't draw flies there. So with that said, that's a Major League Baseball situation. Somebody's got to step in and say, we can't do this to a team after a road trip. We can't make them go from a night game to a day game at home.
I don't disagree vehemently, I suppose, but I also think that, fine, they should have played that day game on Thursday, given the Cubs plenty of time. But I think there's just equal amount of responsibility, or at least it raises the question. We're in 2024, and the Cubs still can't play night games in their home ballpark?
They can.
On Friday and Saturday night?
You don't live there, David.
I know I don't live there.
You're not trying to get home from work.
I know, but that I can still ask the question. I can still wonder that these are the exceptions to the rule. If you want to have the rule, fine, and Friday baseball at Wrigley Field is a tradition that is great to enjoy. Everybody knows that. Craig Council alluded to that. But I just think that you can make exceptions that allow you to play the occasional Friday night game in a situation like the one they just experienced.
I don't disagree with that, but it has to be done way in advance. It's not like, oh, hey, this week we're going to have a night game in Tampa and a day game at home. That's not good. So, I mean, look, they do have a few Friday night games. They do have a few Saturday night games. Those are, again, scripted, allowed. But, again, the Cubs do not have total control of how many night games they schedule. It is still something that they go over with the city of Chicago, the neighborhood, and the aldermen to make sure everything is kosher.
What role did fatigue play in the Cubs having three measly hits on Friday?
I don't know. They didn't have too many in the other games this week either, did they? I mean, they've scored since the White Sox series. They've averaged three runs a game. Okay, so that's a little below the 4.7 they're averaging on the season. I think the major league average is about 4.30. Last year they averaged five runs a game. They were sixth in baseball the entire season in runs scored. So there is a huge difference in the runs they're averaging now compared to last year. Some people would do the scientific part and say, well, that's a product of blowout games. Sometimes the Cubs had an inordinate amount of blowout games last year where it skewed the average. Probably true, but they were a much better offensive unit last year. A
couple quick notes. You talk about the bullpen because the bullpen has blown 15 saves, as many as any team in Major League Baseball. Might be getting some help eventually. Julian Merriweather, Bruce, according to Craig Council before today's game, a few minutes ago, updating on Twitter, various Cub reporters, Julian Merriweather threw a bullpen session, 26 pitches yesterday. Yency Almonte also threw live batting practice and is returning to Chicago for the next steps. And down in the minor league systems, Caleb Killian also threw a bullpen. So he is on the mend. Do any of those three look like potential solutions to the Cubs' problem in the bullpen?
Well, I think Merriweather is the guy that most people think, if he would have stayed healthy, he would have been the closer all along. And he's the guy that had a dynamic 97, 98, good command. He was probably the most surprising good news, along with Mark Leiter last year in the Chicago Cubs bullpen. He would be a welcome sight. I talked to Drew Smiley yesterday, who updated me on Mary Merriweather, and they feel that maybe you know, before, you know, right around early July, he'll be back to health. So that would be great news.
Did Drew Smyly update you on why they took him out of the game after two innings, and he was looking pretty solid the other night to, you know, Hector Neris?
My guess is that they'd like to use him again this weekend. So you can't use him every day in that situation.
The Hector Neris situation, if the Cubs have a lead today, if they manage to score some runs, I don't know, and have a one-run lead in the ninth inning, is there any doubt that Hector Neris gets the ball? Is he the de facto closer, even though they don't want to necessarily refer to him that way?
As soon as I'm done with the show, I believe Craig Counsell will be talking at around 11 o'clock. I'm going to zoom over there from the Marquee Studios here and run over there, and that'll be the first question I ask him after I ask him the question about Armstrong and when he will be a viable leadoff man in his lineup.
So PCA leading off, Hector Neris closing for the Cubs. I think those are the things they have to do. Is help on the way, though, Bruce? Let's get back into that for a moment, because we talked about this being, I labeled it the most disappointing team in baseball based on they are the highest payroll among the six last-place teams. How aggressive do you expect Jed Hoyer to be for bullpen help, for offensive help? What are the next few weeks holding for the Cubs?
What's available, how much it's going to cost, okay? How much is it going to cost money-wise? How much is it going to cost you inventory-wise in your farm system? Are you ready to trade Cassie in a deal, Trinas in a deal, your top young hitters in a deal for a, let's say, Alonzo for 2 months, okay? Are you going to trade one of those two guys and watch them flourish the year after or the year after that in the Mets organization for a two-month buy-in to try to buy you more credibility in your lineup this year? Those are the questions that the front office has to ask. Also, well, Alonzo's $10 million at that time. He makes about $20 million, so it might be $7 or $8 million. Will that skew your money as far as the luxury tax going over that, and how much it's going to cost you? These are things I'm not saying. These are things I know
Sure. Are
the facts of what they're looking at when they try to make a move.
Jed Hoyer told us on the Mullin Haw show that the answers will be internal. We respect that and know that. But I do wonder this, Bruce, as we compare last year and this year, because of where they have, you know, the similarities in where they are in June. Last year, Cody Bellinger was having, you know, a big year. He was the guy carrying a team. He was the guy that maybe was playing above and exceeding expectations. They don't have that guy this year. They don't have anybody who's really having that kind of a season. You point to, you say, wow, that's better than we thought it would be. They have a lot of guys who are saying, like, wow, that's worse than they should be.
Yeah, I'm going to give you some good news.
Okay, great.
Here's the good news. Bellinger was hurt, you know, a little bit. I think from June 9, I think he missed about a month. From the July the 1st to the end of the year, Cody Bellinger had the most runs batted in baseball last year, okay? So if you want to look at somebody that's got hot last year that could do that again, he's going to need some help. But, I mean, he didn't get $30 million this year for not being a good player. He was an outstanding player, and he only had 5 months to put up those 97 RBIs last year. A lot of it was the damage was done in the second half. So there's, if you want to look at that as an indication of what can be moving forward, you can also look at Suzuki's last 2 months of 2023 and look at him as one of the dominant offensive players in the National League. There's a possibility and there is a reality of good baseball and good offense from the Cubs coming along. You're not looking at it right now.
We can debate whether the Cubs will or won't make a deal, or they should or shouldn't, but we kind of are sure, pretty certain, that the White Sox will start dealing whenever they get the right offer for some of their players. Chris Getz certainly is open for business. We'll talk about that next, because there's a relief pitcher who sounded like he might want to stick around for a while. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I owe most of my success and all of my career, good, bad, and ugly, to the White Sox. And so I'm extremely grateful to have been able to build a career here and start my major league career and kind of learn who I am as a pitcher along the way. I saw a winning culture here a few years ago, and it was a lot of fun. It was the peak of my professional career so far, seeing a playoff atmosphere and seeing the White Sox fans come out and watch us and support us. But with that being said, there's a business side to this that I don't really have a say in.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Ninth inning of our show today. Michael Kopech, White Sox closer. For the moment, he's been the rumor of some trade speculation. Ken Rosenthal included Michael Kopech in a report this week, or speculation this week, that he'd be part of a package with the Padres, who covet Garrett Crochet. Bruce, Michael Kopech, in terms of guys on the White Sox roster who are more likely to go than stay, where is he? How high is he?
Well, I had an exclusive interview with him right before he left on the road trip. You can read the story on 670thescore.com on our website. And, David, he just told me that he wants to stay with the White Sox, but he understands that he might not have that call. Look, it hasn't been all success for him, but people covet that 101 mile an hour. People covet the idea that he's not making a lot of money. People covet that he has contract control. They feel, in many organizations, they look at players and go, we can get more out of this guy. This guy's going to be here for a little while, and he's going to help us, and the White Sox, so we'll give him a prospect. But he's going to get traded. If he stays healthy till the trade deadline, David, he's going to go somewhere. And I honestly believe that he is going to get better and better at being a closer, because he has that kind of stuff. When he learns what his role is, and it's just, again, they've been up and back with him with eighth and ninth innings, up here and there. He's a one-inning guy. You give him the ball, you get the breaking ball over, then you have the 101. This guy can be a dynamite closer for somebody.
I don't really disagree with you, Bruce. I think the stuff is there. I wonder this, though. If Michael Kopech becomes the next ex-White Sox pitcher to find success in another organization, at what point in time, if we're not already past it, does Ethan Katz start to get a little bit more heat?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe they can get Fernando Tatis back in that trade with San Diego. You know, the 18-year-old Tatis traded for big games, James, at that time. One of the worst trades, unfortunately, in White Sox history, or maybe any history. But the reality is that if they can get something good back for the future, you know, go for it. If you don't feel that Michael Kopech is a part of your future here and that he is your closer, go ahead and trade him. But they will run the risk of someone else getting more out of him. That's baseball. That's the beauty of, hey, our team can do more with a guy than your team can.
Kopech, DeJong, Fetty, Flexen, Pham. There's going to be at least five guys who are going to be ex-White Sox probably by the trade deadline. They're going to start to compile prospects. Quickly, Bruce, we're running out of time, but Luis Robert Jr., we haven't mentioned him, because every city he goes into, as we saw in Seattle, they're going to try to talk about what it would take to get him on a team, because the Mariners want him, the Phillies want him, the Dodgers want him. At least those are the teams that I saw mentioned this week linked to Luis Robert Jr.
They want him, but at the same time, do the White Sox believe in Luis Robert Jr.? That is the question to answer. Do they believe they'll get 140 games a year out of Luis Robert Jr.? If the answer inside that office is no, they will trade him. Do they have to trade him now to get optimum amount? No, you don't. You have 3 years of contract control remaining on him. Maybe he's the number one player after playing the healthy rest of the 2024 season. Maybe he's the number one trade bait that the White Sox have in the wintertime.
Good point, Bruce. Great stuff today. I really appreciate you lining up Justin Steele, who was a guest. We have to thank Scotty Podsednik as well. And you know what? Thank you for the first time being I was ever called Oppenheimer. So that was a new first for me.
Good. Listen, Oppenheimer, you're brilliant. as a scientist.
Sure. I know that's what you meant.
David, have a great week. People can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Look forward to the next week and the special on Sandberg. Friday, the big weekend. Next week, we should have a good time. Thanks so much.
Cubs pregame, 12:45, first pitch, 1:20, right here on the Score in the free Odyssey app. Steve Rosenblum is next. Thanks for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. It's David Hall, Bruce Levine, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I owe most of my success and all of my career, good, bad, and ugly, to the White Sox. And so I'm extremely grateful to have been able to build a career here and start my major league career and kind of learn who I am as a pitcher along the way. I saw a winning culture here a few years ago, and it was a lot of fun. It was the peak of my professional career so far, seeing a playoff atmosphere and seeing the White Sox fans come out and watch us and support us. But with that being said, there's a business side to this that I don't really have a say in.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Ninth inning of our show today. Michael Kopech, White Sox closer. For the moment, he's been the rumor of some trade speculation. Ken Rosenthal included Michael Kopech in a report this week, or speculation this week, that he'd be part of a package with the Padres, who covet Garrett Crochet. Bruce, Michael Kopech, in terms of guys on the White Sox roster who are more likely to go than stay, where is he? How high is he?
Well, I had an exclusive interview with him right before he left on the road trip. You can read the story on 670thescore.com on our website. And David, he just told me that he wants to stay with the White Sox, but he understands that he might not have that call. Look, it hasn't been all success for him, but people covet that 101 mile an hour. People covet the idea that he's not making a lot of money. People covet that he has contract control. They feel, in many organizations, they look at players and go, we can get more out of this guy. This guy's going to be here for a little while, and he's going to help us, and the White Sox will give him a prospect, but he's going to get traded. If he stays healthy till the trade deadline, David, he's going to go somewhere, and I honestly believe that he is going to get better and better at being a closer, because he has that kind of stuff. When he learns what his role is, and it's just, again, they've been up and back with him with eighth and ninth innings, up here and there. He's a one-inning guy. You give him the ball, you get the breaking ball over, then you have the 101. This guy can be a dynamite closer for somebody.
I don't really disagree with you, Bruce. I think the stuff is there. I wonder this, though. If Michael Kopech becomes the next ex-White Sox pitcher to find success in another organization, at what point in time, if we're not already past it, does Ethan Katz start to get a little bit more heat?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, again, maybe they can get Fernando Tatis back in that trade with San Diego. You know, the 18-year-old Tatis traded for big games, James, at that time. One of the worst trades, unfortunately, in White Sox history, or maybe any history. But the reality is that if they can get something good back for the future, you know, go for it. If you don't feel that Michael Kopech is a part of your future here and that he is your closer, go ahead and trade him. But they will run the risk of someone else getting more out of him. That's baseball. That's the beauty of, hey, our team can do more with a guy than your team can.
Kopech, DeJong, Fetty, Flexen, Pham. There's going to be at least five guys who are going to be ex-White Sox probably by the trade deadline. They're going to start to compile prospects. Quickly, Bruce, we're running out of time, but Luis Robert Jr., we haven't mentioned him, because every city he goes into, as we saw in Seattle, they're going to try to talk about what it would take to get him on a team, because the Mariners want him, the Phillies want him, the Dodgers want him. At least those are the teams that I saw mentioned this week linked to Luis Robert Jr.
They want him, but at the same time, do the White Sox believe in Luis Robert Jr.? That is the question to answer. Do they believe they'll get 140 games a year out of Luis Robert Jr.? If the answer inside that office is no, they will trade him. Do they have to trade him now to get optimum amount? No, you don't. You have 3 years of contract control remaining on him. Maybe he's the number one player after playing the healthy rest of the 2024 season. Maybe he's the number one trade bait on that the White Sox have in the winter time.
Good point, Bruce. Great stuff today. I really appreciate you lining up Justin Steele, who was a guest. We have to thank Scotty Podsednik as well. And you know what? Thank you for the first time being ever I was ever called Oppenheimer. So that was a new first for me.
Listen, Oppenheimer, you're brilliant as a scientist.
Sure. I know that's what you meant.
David, have a great week. People can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Look forward to the next week and the special on Sandberg. Friday, the big weekend. Next week, we should have a good time. Thanks so much.
Cubs pregame, 12:45, first pitch, 120, right here on the Score in the free Odyssey app. Steve Rosenblum is next. Thanks for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. It's David Hall, Bruce Levine, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We'll